is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Now, here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you about our guest, Morgan Knudsen, founder of the Entity Seeker Paranormal Research and Teachings Group. Now, that is an evolution of the Association for the Psychical Research in Canada from 1918, as well as teaching the Living Program for clients. She brings classes and presentations on a phenomenon to a new level. She is the resident paranormal specialist featured on Haunted Hospitals and Paranormal 911, as well as a featured writer and contributor to Haunted Magazine as well. Morgan, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you guys for having me. This is wonderful.
This is going to be fun. How long have you been doing this?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's been nearly 20 years now. I got going, or got interested at least, right when I was a young kid. I had my first, I guess what you call paranormal encounter,
yeah,
about the age of 8 or 9, and it piqued my curiosity, well, beyond curiosity. I mean, it became a passion so quickly.
That's what hooked you.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it was a frightening experience at the time, but to be honest, I mean, I think even at that age, I was able to see past the fear and begin to approach what I was experiencing with some semblance of curiosity, and I was grateful to be able to have a family that supported that as well. So it pushed me forward. I just had to know more.
Did you ever expect it to be your avocation?
You know, it's funny because I think there was always a part of me that really, it was such a drive to understand it, and it was such a drive to just envelop myself in the information and the mystery of it, that I don't necessarily know whether I thought of it as a job per se, but I definitely knew it was going to be a huge part of my future.
And you're Canadian. Is there a huge Canadian market for the paranormal? I believe there is.
There is, yeah. And you know what? It's so funny because Canada is a little bit different than some of the other countries, including the U.S., because oftentimes Canadians tend to be a little bit more quiet about it, where they're very, very, very interested in learning, but oftentimes a little bit on the shy side about coming forward with experiences and things like that. So even when I'm teaching a classroom, it's interesting to watch people who start out saying, you know, well, I'm here, but I don't believe in any of this stuff. And then all of a sudden, halfway through the class, you've got them putting up their hand and wanting to tell their story. So they tend to be a little bit more on the shy side. But, I mean, the contributions that have been made to parapsychology in Canada have just been immense.
Did your family contribute at all to this? I mean, is there any genetics here?
Yeah, it's so interesting because about 6 years into establishing Entity Seeker, I uncovered that my great-great-grandfather founded the first paranormal association in Canada, and I had no idea. And it really struck me as interesting because I'm one of these people, I don't believe in coincidence. And it was really fascinating to me that this guy, who was a very notable physician, his name was Albert Durant Watson, very noted physician, very famous guy in town in Ontario at the time, and I mean, he put his career on the line for this, and ended up publishing two different books, The 20th Plane and Birth Through Death. And he was, he really put everything on the line to be like, look, there is more, and what there is can be really, really joyful. And he had a completely different spin on this stuff.
It's amazing stuff. And you teach a concept called teaching the living. What is that?
Yeah, so teaching the living, I ended up establishing early on because my the girl that I co-founded Entity Seeker with, she's since passed away, but Stephanie and I, we began to see these different patterns within the haunting phenomena, and we started to notice that there was a direct emotional correlation between people's state of being and how they are and move into the world, the energy that they put into the world, and by energy I mean their emotional center, mm-hmm. and their way of moving through life. And when I realized that there was a correlation between the amount of joy or the amount of, you know, fear or depression or anything like that, and the haunting activity that they were experiencing, it was impossible to turn a blind eye to it. So teaching the living has become about getting people to understand that how they are and how they're moving through the world, it has a direct relationship to the type of paranormal activity that they're getting back.
What would you say would be your expertise, your specialty?
I think my expertise is people, honestly. You know, it's funny.
The living or the dead?
I think it has to be the living. You know, because when you've got hauntings, whether it be negative entities or you know, human spirits or anything like that, you know, there's only so much you can really do and participate with them. But the people that are struggling, the people that are having trouble with it, and oftentimes it's a legacy issue. You know, you've got people that have moved from house to house to house to house for generations that are struggling with this. That, you know, it has to become about the people. You know, we can change what they're doing.
This experiment from 1972 called the Philip Experiment, named after a person they created named Philip Aylesford. Tell us about this experiment. What did they actually try to do?
So I love this experiment because I think this is such a prime example of exactly what we're talking about. Basically what happened was that the research decided that they were going to see if they actually needed a person who had notably passed away to recreate the seances and things like that of the Victorian era, or could they create a haunting without a persona, without that intelligence that's there? Could thought be enough to generate consciousness? And what they did was they recreated some of these situations where there was a, you know, a seance and a sitting and what we would consider the typical sitting for a seance. And they would do this day after day after day after day, and they were getting very frustrated because they worked at it for about a year, and they couldn't get anything to happen. And so when they re-examined what these people were doing back in the 18th and 1900s, what they realized was that the factor that they had left out was joy. And when they began to realize that the people were getting together because they were having fun, they were enjoying themselves, they were telling jokes, it wasn't this starch environment that what we see in the films. It was a very, you know, joyful get-together. And when they began to add that aspect into the experiment itself, within 48 hours they had stuff start to happen. And the intelligence to grow out of their character of Philip, they wrote an entire backstory about who this person was supposed to be. This person had never existed. And lo and behold, they started getting responses to the name Philip. And they repeated this experiment later on with another group, completely different people, that created a backstory and a character by the name of Lilith. And they had the exact same response, so it was repeatable. And it was, to me, it was such a landmark experiment for so many reasons, and it's never talked about, which I don't understand.
Well, what's interesting is the group was seated around a table with initial seances, yielding no contact, no communication, no phenomenon, they said. And they changed some test conditions, the person who was responsible for it, as you know, by dimming lights, changing the environment to mimic that more of a traditional seance. And the participants apparently began feeling some kind of presence, table vibrations, breezes, unexpected echoes and rapping sounds which matched responses to questions about Philip's life. At one point, the table tilted on a single leg and other times moved across the room without human contact, although the audio and video and witness accounts document the paranormal phenomena. But they say Philip never appeared to the participants, but it was one heck of a seance, wasn't it, Morgan?
Oh, it was incredible. And, you know, it was, I think it was something that was so landmark in terms of the what it was demonstrating. I mean, the fact that they were creating an intelligence from a seemingly nothing, from seemingly their own projected thought, tells us a lot about what can happen in a haunted home.
Truly remarkable the way these experiments are done. I don't know, are you familiar with my late aunt's work? Her name was Shafika Karegula. She was a psychiatrist who came over from Oxford, England. That's where she did her studies. But she was a doctor. And she had seen some Edgar Casey work. And then Wilder Penn, whatever his last name was. And he got her involved in the paranormal, where she dropped her practice of psychiatry to study telepathy. And she did that full time and, you know, wrote several books about it and everything else. Changed her life.
I believe it. My great-great-grandfather was very similar story. He started out as a absolute complete skeptic, didn't believe in any of this stuff. And it wasn't until he met a fellow by the name of Louis Benjamin through a group of his friends who was a channel. And he was channeling a group that called themselves the Humble Ones. And he was just literally going to sit in the room to observe what was going on. He thought it was ridiculous. And it wasn't long before he realized there was something extremely special going on. And it was the same idea. It just absolutely changed his life. And the messages that he ended up transcribing, you know, all went into his two books.
Do you come across evil entities with your work?
You know, it's so funny because with a chunk of my work early on was to look at these sort of negative hauntings that pop up every once in a while and to start to understand exactly what they are, because one of the number one questions I always get is, what is it? What are they? We don't get it. Are these angry people? Are these something else? What is it? And the one thing I realized really early on was that there's no measuring stick for a ghost. I mean, we don't have a meter that can measure them. We don't know what they're made of, so we can't calibrate something to understand it. But what we could do is to start to look at what behaviors that they were exhibiting and what behaviors we were projecting in order to get these different reactions from them and what our role was in it. So early on, we started to look at, well, okay, maybe we can't answer the question of what they are, but we can sure answer the question of what is causing and what provokes it. So we've been running into, you know, cases where there's been, you know, biting and scratching and, you know, people getting hit and all sorts of things. But we began to realize really quickly that there's a very animalistic side to these entities and in their way of being. And as we moved along with that idea, we began to realize that there was quite a direct correlation between events that were going on in the space that were a lot of negative focused thought, and these consciousnesses seemed to mimic a lot of the either the damage or the trauma or things like that was going on in the space or with the people at the time. So it was very interesting, and we began to work from there.
What would you call the other side? Would you call it something that was part of our universe, very normal and expected? Is it supernatural? What do you think it is?
Oh gosh, you know, I think it's such a wonderful thing, and I don't think it's something that is necessarily separate from us. I think one of the flawed premises with hauntings and the afterlife and stuff like that is that it's something that's out there versus and something that's not tangible. And I think it's something that we've got access to more often than we think we do. So, you know, what it is, I think it's all that is. You know, I like to call it source energy. It's where we come from and go back to. But one thing I have learned about it is that it is really pure positive energy. It's a good thing. It's not a negative.
It may have started before physical human life.
I think it's consciousness at the heart of what exists. I think absolutely. I think it definitely started before human life. I think we came much later.
Morgan, what is unfinished business in regards to hauntings and things like that?
You know, it's interesting to see some of the shows and stuff like that have come out, because and oftentimes the stories that we'll get back from people and their interpretations of things that have gone on. And what I've noticed throughout the academic studies of the paranormal, whether it be through places like the Winbridge Institute or like people like, you know, your aunt and my great-great-grandfather, is that the unfinished business has to do with people, the living. It's not, the unfinished business isn't with the people who have passed over, and it really becomes our job to clean up our stuff, to get through the emotional stuff in order to turn around and access, I think, you know, these spirits that are, they've now crossed over, if you want to use that term. They now exist in this pure positive energy, and if we want to line up with that and have that interaction, you know, we've got to get with the program.
Yeah, the doctor that I was trying to think that my aunt worked with and influenced her a lot was Wilder Penfield. He was a neurosurgeon.
Right.
And, you know, he started, yeah. You know, he was fighting between what he knew as a neurosurgeon, the brain, and what was outside of the brain. And have you concluded that whatever's happening here is not part of the physical being, that it's happening outside of it?
Well, you know, and that it brings up such a core subject, I think, which is the philosopher David Chalmers and his concept of the hard problem, which is, you know, is consciousness fundamental or is it emergent? And I think where we're coming to with science and academia and the medical field and all sorts of things like that is that we're beginning to understand that our brain really is a translator of consciousness. And as we're, I think, beginning to remake the model of the brain and to understand it on a different level, things are coming into perspective a little bit more, I think, for people who are, you know, in the medical field. And that question is becoming a lot less complicated. But it's still got some ways to go.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern. And go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350 plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s. Dance away with hip hop beats and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com. or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced.
Bring it!
Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.